You're listening to North Okanagan Shoe Swap Freedom Radio.
Good afternoon. It's Wednesday, June the 22nd. We are at Tal's studio in Vernon, and we're back with Brad Weston from Lumbee. Brad is going to start number one of a six-part series about his journey with common law and how he got into all this and where it's taking him and where it's where he's been and where he's going. We're really excited about this, Brad, because so many people have such a keen interest, and we're grateful that you took the time to come to Vernon and have another interview with us. So thanks for being here.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. I'm excited to be here, Penny.
So as I was looking at you sent us an email, and the first thing that we're going to talk about, it looks like, is dealing with your dad's estate and experience of the judicial legal system and coming to know how it operates. That's what you've got down as the first thing. So
yes,
maybe let's hear that story and how it evolved and where it took you.
Absolutely. Before we get into it, I just want to clarify something from our last interview, maybe rectify something that I said. My mom listened to our interview, and she pointed out, I haven't listened to it myself, and I'm a little bit hesitant to do so, but she said that I mentioned that I live on a property. I don't know how I worded it, but I guess I made it sound like I own the property. I live with my mom. So I'm a 40-year-old man that lives in my mom's basement, and I'm setting out to do all these things. So that's just to be open and transparent, to share that with everybody. So getting into this, I did request after our first interview that we go over this in a series of ways, or six different sections. And to start with my father's estate, this has been my introduction into the legal system, into the corporate world of commerce, and this will lead into and really help a lot of people understand how our legal system operates and the harm that it causes to people, the financial harm, the psychological harm, the stresses that it puts on pretty well everybody that has to engage in the legal system. So as I mentioned before, my dad in 2012, he was struck with congestive heart failure, and he was put into the ICU here in Vernon, and he was given two weeks to live. So my wife at the time and I, we moved up from Vancouver. We came up to help him and came to help with his land, his property up in Trinity Valley here in Lumbee. And they gave him 2 weeks to live. He wanted to die at home, so they ended up agreeing that he could be released from the hospital. They gave him OxyContin. They gave him morphine to take in the event that he was, in pain. And he was released, returned, went home, bedridden. And over time, over the course of a couple of weeks, he started to complain that my stepmother was drugging him, was poisoning him, and was neglecting him, was refusing to give him food and water. And he was bringing this up with our family members and his really close friends and the executor, he didn't even have an executor at the time, but he was bringing this up with his really close friends and family. And he didn't have a will in place, but he started to complain that my stepmother forced him, in his words, sat him down at the kitchen table and forced him to sign blank documents. And I don't know what they say. I don't know what they say. So my cousin, she asked, can I go to the RCMP? I don't like to deal with RCMP. But I agreed. I said, sure, go to the RCMP. So she went to the RCMP and she told them about this neglect and what my dad had been telling and saying. So the RCMP in Lumbee, the way that they handled this matter, no proper investigation, they just went out and pulled over my dad and my stepmom. They didn't take formal statements from any of our family members and friends. And mind you, there was about eight of us that were in the know that my dad was telling this stuff was happening. So the RCMP pulled my parents over in town, and they and took them to the police station. And at the same time, my stepmom, she had also, oh man, I'm a little bit off on a lot of this. My dad also went out, and he did have a proper will drafted. But so the police pull them into the police station, and they interview them. And my dad told them everything, you know, everything's fine. It's all good. He wouldn't tell them what he told us. And ended up sending them on their way. But my stepmom, the primary part of this is she had threatened to murder my dad directly to me. And the reason being was because after she had forced him to sign this blank will and power of attorney, he went out and he had a proper will done by a lawyer, and he also took and gifted a portion of his property in my name. What his true desires and wishes are is for me to purchase the property, is for that piece of property to stay in our family name. That's all he wanted. So he gave her a life estate over the property, and he gave me a quarter of his share, so essentially putting me on title with my stepmom and him. When she got the property tax assessment back with my name on it, that's when she got really upset, because she did do that behind her back. And then she made these threats. That's what kicked off my cousin wanting to go to the RCMP. I agreed to that. And so because of the threats, they ended up, they couldn't do anything because he wasn't telling them about the neglect. But because of the threats and because there's a potential for some sort of violence, they went to the home knowing that there's firearms in the house. They came to me and they asked me how many firearms. I told them there's 20 to 25 firearms, and that 10 to 15 of them are mine that I own that are stored at my parents' house. So they checked, they did a background check. My firearms license was expired at that time. So I told this policeman, I said, I will go out and I will renew my firearms license. So I did that right away. They confiscated, I think it was 12 firearms that they took out of the home. I told the police that there's 20 to 25 firearms in that household. So they went there. They didn't search the house. They just, my parents turned them over. My dad gave them these 12, saying that these are my son's firearms, and these are to go to him once his firearms license is renewed. So it takes about 6 months to get a new firearms license. 6 months later, I get my firearms license back. I go to the police to pick up my firearms from the police station, only to find out they'd given them away. They gave them to another man who I don't even know, who apparently is an associated friend of my dad and my stepmom. So I asked the police, how can you give my firearms away to somebody I don't even know? And they ended up saying, well, your dad said that, you know, he's going to keep them for safekeeping. So I went to this gentleman asking him, and he wouldn't give them to me. He said, you're not getting these guns until your dad is dead. I said, well, it's my property. Like, it's not even like, and you can't be doing that. So here we have these firearms that are my property now, tied into essentially my dad's estate. And the only firearm that I had any care for is my great-grandfather's firearm that was handed to my great-grandfather, to my grandfather, to my dad and his brothers, and then to me. And I'm the one that stopped hunting out of our family. Like, I stopped hunting, so it's got a lot of sentimental value, and it's something I want to pass on to my children. So it's the only reason I kind of like hung on and stuck with this. So what happened out of this is my dad had this proper will done by a lawyer in Lumbee, and in 2015, that's when he ended up, when he passed on, February 5th, 2015, I hadn't spoken to him or seen him for the entire year prior to that because of the things that my stepmom was doing. And it was very clear in when we were speaking to the RCMP that crimes were being committed, the things that my stepmom was doing, even the will, for her to be able to go out and draft in her own handwriting without any witnesses present is fraud. She committed an act of fraud. My dad was complaining that she was stealing, draining his money, wouldn't give him access to his finances. He kept claiming she's taken $50,000 from me. She's taken $50,000 from me. So he passed away February 5th, 2015. My dad put his good friend, Franz Slimers, as the executor of the estate. So Franz, I agreed, like, let's go get a lawyer. So we went to a lawyer in Kelowna. And in addition to this, I didn't even hear that my dad had died for about 8 days. So it was about 8 days after his death this is all taking place. We find out he has his proper will done. So I go to a lawyer to probate his will, to have it probated, paid the lawyer up front $7,500. Mm. And I told her at the time, I said, I don't agree to you speaking for me or acting on my behalf. The only reason I'm hiring you...
You're speaking to the lawyer?
I'm speaking to the lawyer, yes. Her name is Joni. But I'm speaking to her, telling her that I'm only hiring you to probate the will. And that this firearm is the only reason I'm doing this. This one firearm that is tied into this. The police have my property. They're kind of claiming it as it forms a part of my dad's estate. It doesn't. But I'm hiring you to probate the will on behalf for this gentleman, Franz, who's the executor. So a notice goes out, and it goes out to all the beneficiaries saying that, you know, this is being brought forth in the courts to prove that this will is valid. And as soon as we did that, my stepmom disputed the validity of my dad's will, trying to say that I coerced him. She was making claims that I punched my dad in the head, which is like way beyond. I've had an amazing relationship with the man. And just the things that are said were just vile. But she made this claim that, you know, it's invalid and it should be thrown out and her will should stand. Well, she wouldn't ever produce that will, this will that she was claiming was the one that, and the one that my dad was saying that he was forced to sign. Even the RCMP station, we go to the RCMP station and they claim that, well, she says that she has a will. And we said, well, have you seen that will? No. Well, exactly. And I'm telling them it's fraud. Like, you guys need to look at it, because my dad, like we were telling you, said that she had forced him to sign this will. So she had hired a lawyer here in Vernon. And of course, I'm responding myself to whatever documentation they're putting out and everything. And over time, we ended up, because the lawyer was representing the executor, Franz, but we ended up cutting ties with the lawyer in that capacity. We still utilized her for advice, but said that we're acting on our own behalf. So we got to do the correspondences between the lawyers back and forth and all of the court documents. And that's what you see that I brought here today. This pile of documents is what has gone on for 7 entire years.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes, absolutely.
So when you weren't using Joni anymore as your lawyer, was that so you could get all the correspondence? Did you feel you would have more of a take on what was going on? Or
No, it was
what was the reason?
The primary reason was finances. Okay. So you're paying a lawyer's charging $400 or $500 an hour. Joni was $350 when we were utilizing her. So it's primarily the finances. Yeah. But it's also the fact that you can present yourselves in the courts and to be able to utilize your own voice to freedom of speech and all that, right? And I just really felt driven that I need to present myself.
That alone is amazing to me, that you first of all, you knew that you could represent yourself, you didn't have to have a lawyer, and that you would even know how to do it, and perhaps it's just always just telling the truth. I have no idea, but
I really felt telling the truth and the facts was a vital part of our court system. And I really felt that by expressing and by reiterating and showing the truth and the facts over and over again, that something would be done about it. I was completely wrong.
Right.
And that's the essential,
what a disappointment,
that's the essential part. It's not a disappointment. Because it's given me all these life lessons, these valuable life lessons. It's taught me how our system is and the need for actual change, for like us to actually introduce what we're getting into with all this common law stuff. Because through it, representing ourselves, dealing with these lawyers one-on-one, going to the courts, you file documents, you're doing these applications back and forth, and essentially you're telling your story. You're telling your story through affidavits, and it's very clear of when you look at it, it's very clear of what's going on when you're doing it. And that's how they set it up. So essentially you're having the trial before you're even having a trial. But we got to deal with the lawyers, her lawyers, one-on-one. And I just would not back down from what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I had, because my firearms were tied into it, I also had other private property stored on my parents' land up there in the house. So I made, because it wasn't going anywhere, and I was just arguing that you guys have my private property. I don't want nothing to do with the estate stuff, other than I want to be able to buy the property like it's written in the will, like how it's laid out. I just want to be able to purchase the property. But because my private property was tied into this, I did small claim. I made two small claims cases. I made one against the man. I placed one upon the man who had the rifles, yeah. And I placed another one upon my stepmother, mm-hmm. seeking to get back my private property, things that belong to me that aren't my dad's, they're just stored on my parents' property. So I made these claims in small claims court to get both my costs plus my private property back, my firearms from the police station that were still tied in there, and also like just, you know, like I had tires and stuff stored at my dad's. Mm-hmm. So I opened up two small claims cases. We have the Supreme Court matter going with my dad's estate to prove the validity of his will. We're dealing with these lawyers one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And the lawyers, I remember we were sitting there once dealing with the small claims matter, and one of the lawyers is sitting there going through a law book. And then he's threatening me, telling me that if I continue with this, that they're going to come after me for costs and come after me for some sort of 10% surcharge. And I just looked over at him and just kind of shook my head, like, what are you even getting at? Right here you are, you're a lawyer, and you're needing to rifle through a law book because you don't clearly, they don't know the law. Even though they've gone to law school, they don't know the law. So he's going through this law book, and he's trying to find something. And I just give him this look, and he just closed the book. And I'm not, but he like knows that I'm not backing down. Mm-hmm. And there was another dispute outside of that with the firearms, where I took them into a courtroom, and it's a long drawn out disaster. But I took them into the courtroom, and on this particular occasion about the firearms, and we walked out. When we walked out, this young lawyer, he pulls me aside and he says, how much do you care about the firearms? How much do they matter? I said, what are you talking about? That's my property. I'm like, you got me tied into this whole thing with my dad's estate, spending all this money. You're messing with my private family life. Mm-hmm. It's having an effect on me. It's having an effect on my wife and my children. I said, it's everything. Like, of course they matter. He goes, okay. What about the property? How much does your dad's property matter? I said, the property, I'm supposed to be able to buy it, and this is all this is about. I'm just supposed to be able to turn around and just purchase that piece of land from my stepmom if she doesn't want to live there, or if she dies, or whatever it is, right? I'm supposed to be able to purchase it. Well, he turns around and says to me, he goes, well, we took your mother on pro bono, knowing that we're going to get paid out of the sale of the property. So here you have a lawyer who's admittingly saying that they are only in this because they know how much money is there, and they're in there to take that money from my stepmom.
That's awful.
And they took her on pro bono knowing that she has money on her side. It is awful. They have money on her side, or she has money on her side of the property. But she doesn't have any money in the bank. Mm-hmm. So I found that... it was pretty heart wrenching to know that that's what they're doing. So he tells
your mother in law is not, or your stepmom is not aware of this as to what's going on.
She doesn't understand. She doesn't know that they're taking advantage of her. Right. She doesn't realize it, and I think that's what a lot of people, like everybody, I think that's a lot of people, all of us, getting into these legal disputes between each other with one another. The only ones that are benefiting are the ones that are taking advantage of us. And that's the lawyers, that's the judges, that's the RCMP. They're doing it for their gain. They're not doing it to help us. They're not doing it to resolve issues. Mm-hmm. They want it to drag out mm-hmm. as long as possible mm-hmm. so that they keep that income coming for themselves. And they know how much they, even myself, my lawyer would have known how much money I have in the bank, mm-hmm. how much I have in assets and everything. And they will work for you until it is gone.
Until you're drained.
Until it's drained.
What a broken system, eh?
It's not broken. It's designed to do exactly what it's doing. Okay. We say that over and over again. It's got to be restructured in a way that puts our rights, but also our well-being ahead of everything else. Because right now, it's structured so that it's that corporate commerce exchange where they're benefiting and they're doing a lot of things in secret so that they can drain other people's resources. And not only their finances, I'm also starting to learn, thanks to my partner, Vicky, to drain our energy, our energetic mm-hmm. soul being. It's all a part of it because I went into it without the financial means mm-hmm. and then learning all this, you know, I looked up all the laws and all the legalities behind it. And I followed every single procedure, rule, every policy that they have in the courts, filling out the documents, done it to the T, like how it's supposed to be done. And then you have lawyers who are turning around, they're submitting things late, they're submitting things with the wrong applications. And what these lawyers did, after this young apprentice told me that we took her on pro bono, he said that he had a falling out with the main lawyer. I'm going to name people throughout this as we have these radio interviews, because these are public people mm-hmm. who don't have the right to remain private because they're working in the public. So Robert Kulas is the main lawyer that my stepmother utilized here in Vernon. And so it was Dawson McKay was this young apprentice. And so he told me, Dawson said, we had this falling out. Now I've gone my separate ways and I just want to be done with this and we just want to be paid. Well, that's great. You just want to be paid. I want my family matter to be resolved. In a proper fashion, mm-hmm. in a timely fashion, mm-hmm. with the least amount of expenses on me and on my stepmom.
Yeah.
So he goes his own separate way. Then I get this letter that she's now has another lawyer who's in Kelowna, Benson Law. His name is Terry McCaffrey. He sends a letter to us, and he wants to sell the property. He's asking us as the executors. I'm the alternate executor. Fran Slimers is the executor. He's asking us to sell the property. Why is he asking us to sell the property? That's the very first thing he does, is ask us to sell the property. No, we're not agreeing to that. So because we said no, we turned that down, they turned around and started making applications to the courts to sell the property. They started making applications to overturn us as the beneficiaries to my, or not the beneficiaries, as the executors to my dad's estate, trying to tell us that you can't be a beneficiary and the executor to estate at the same time. Yes, you can. That's a common, mm-hmm. common thing. Mm-hmm. But that was what they were trying to tell us. And that's what they were trying to present in the courts, is that you guys can't be a beneficiary and be the executor at the same time. So they were trying to, I can't remember what it's called, but they were trying to have us removed, and then they wanted somebody else to be appointed. So they were trying to appoint somebody from my stepmother's side, and they were trying to appoint this man in Lumbee who, in all honesty, despises my father, is well known, and so he wouldn't have been doing what's in the best interest of my dad or the beneficiaries, or doing what his wishes were. So we had to argue that. And then they moved away from that, and then they made an application asking and seeking to get the public guardian and trustee to be the administrator of my dad's estate. Well, they turned around, and I looked up all the rules and all the regulations about it, and they can't. They can't remove us as beneficiary or as the executors. They can't have the public guardian and trustee act unless there's somebody within the family, unless there's nobody in the family that wants to act or be the administrator. They just can't do it. So they're making all these essentially vexatious, invalid applications to the court, and the courts are allowing it. They're allowing it to happen. We kept calling them out, saying like, this is wrong. This is, these, you know, this, and seeking damages, making application. We're making applications, myself and Franz, for damages for these false claims and applications to the court, and wasting all of our time. The judges wouldn't even award us the damages. They wouldn't even, they just kept adjourning everything and putting it off and putting it off.
Oh, frustrating, eh?
Extremely frustrating. Even the public guardian and trustee wrote a letter, turned around and wrote a letter to them and you know, asking and questioning, saying why this isn't the proper procedure. You're going about it the wrong ways. We can't even act. So that's about 4 years in. I think that was about 4 years in. Let's see. So it started 2015. And then, yeah, that was about, and then 2020 was when our trial happened. January 2020 is when the trial. So about a total of 5 years. When it came to setting up the trial, and I was adamant over and over, I kept reiterating that we're ready for trial. Let's go to a trial. Let's go to a trial. They kept putting a spin on it that we were the ones that were supposed to set up the trial, which I didn't really get, but I just was like, whatever, I want to do it. So they said, okay, it needs to be a 5-day trial, 5-day hearing. So I did the applications to set the hearing. That's not actually the responsibility of the defendant. That's the responsibility of the claimant. So it was actually on them. So here I am thinking that, you know, I want to do it anyway, but I was paying, we were paying the fees. And then I can't remember how much total it is, but it's, I think for the courtroom is something like $1,500 per day.
And these are things people wouldn't normally know, but like yourself, they want to get it over with. And exactly. So they proceed.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're paying for everything when
the other party is the one that should have been paying for this.
You know, there's a real common thread here that we're seeing happening all over the world and all through COVID and all through everything we've been going through is this big reveal of what's really going on. And like you said, this has all shown you just the corruption in the system and what needs to happen, right?
Absolutely.
As well as all these other places we're seeing it.
Yeah.
There's a big reveal. It's kind of cool when you think about it because we wouldn't otherwise know these things.
No.
And it's wonderful that you're sharing it with the public.
Yes. And so, I'm driven to share it with the public with as many people as we can.
Absolutely.
Because there is alternative ways, and that's what we're going to be getting into, and there's alternative ways that benefit everybody.
So let's bring it back to the point where you were booking the court and paying $1,500 a day to have this hearing. So let's bring it back to that point.
We didn't actually have to pay the $1,500 per day because they ended up waiving that because one of the judges thankfully did turn around and say that actually, they're the party that's supposed to be, and I think this judge recognized and because he actually
shafted,
yeah, and he actually I specifically remember that day he actually turned on these two lawyers and put them in their position, and it was refreshing.
Are you allowed to
us.
Mention this good judge? Can you say his name?
If I can remember,
I mean, if there's somebody doing the right thing, they should be lauded, right?
I don't want to give the wrong judge credit because I've dealt with a lot of the judges in there, and they're not doing what's right.
Okay.
But the one judge, if the name does come, I will definitely give him credit.
Yeah, you can blurt it out later if you remember.
But from it as well, when we were going through this about getting into the courts, I'm still utilizing our lawyer for advice. So I went to her. I said, okay, going into court, like, could I hire you to do the trial, even at the last minute? Could I hire you if I wanted to? She goes, yeah, you could, but it's going to be $50,000 up front. So it's $10,000 per day. So we're already pretty well 5 years into this now, and I'm asking her this 5 years later, and she's not telling me. Why didn't she tell me that at the beginning, that if this has to go to a trial, it's going to cost you $50,000, $60,000 a day. It costs about $10,000 a day to go to a trial. Why doesn't the lawyer tell you that up front? Why don't they tell people that?
Because you would run fast and far.
Exactly. and people, no, who can afford that, right? And here we are, people are making claims against each other for a lot of the times, like petty little things that could be resolved between themselves and should be resolved between themselves if they would just look themselves in the eyes and talk about things. Yeah. But I ask her that, and she tells me in the kind of like the final hour sort of deal. And then I go, okay, well, then if this was going to go to a trial, same thing for my stepmom, right? She would have to be paying $50,000, $60,000 up front. They don't allow you to go in there pro bono. There's none of that. You have to pay that money up front. Mm. She goes, yeah, it's all up front. So she would have to be paying them up front. I said, perfect. So then that's where I just like, okay, let's get this into trial. Mm-hmm. The judges, when they called them out, when they called these lawyers out for putting it on us that we were the ones that are supposed to be paying and supposed to be the ones making the application to get it into trial, ended up at the same time making an order that the fees are waived for her. So she's the one that has this vexatious claim that mm-hmm. has no merits, no grounds, there's no proof behind anything that she's saying. And it's very clear that she's doing all these really harmful things, but they turn around and reward her and allow her to continue it on. So they go from setting a 5-day trial to now saying it has to be 9 days. And how much of this stuff got put off, but they finally set it. We set a date for a 9-day trial. I fully prepared. I had a binder that is a good foot thick of documentation, everything to go through, fully prepared to state our case and go over it in accordance with all of their rules, all their policies and their procedures, to the best of my ability as a layman in the court system. Mm-hmm. We go in there. My stepmom's not there. Her lawyers aren't there. Nobody showed up. It's just us. It's just the executor, Franz, and myself. And then this judge, Judge Benton, sitting on the bench. And I was thrown off. What do I do now? They're not here, right? Well, apparently we still need to prove the validity of the will. But I wanted to bring up all these things about the harm that my dad or my stepmom was causing to my dad. I wanted to bring up all the fraud, all the things that, you know, I wanted to go over everything and really expose what she had done. But now it's just this judge is sitting here. He goes, no, you're just here to prove the validity of the will, which is a really simple thing. And all we had to do is we just had to go get the lawyer who drafted the will with my dad to come to the courthouse and say, yeah, that will is valid. And even at that, having a will, when you go to a lawyer, why do we have a system in place where you go to a lawyer, you draft a will with him that when that whoever it is dies, so if I draft a will, that should be it. Mm-hmm. But we're in a system where when you die, you now have to prove to the courts, to your family, to a whole bunch of other people that will is valid before you can even do anything and enforce it. And then if somebody doesn't agree with it or they don't think it's fair, then they can challenge it and they can argue it like my stepmom did. Or they can say that, you know, somebody tried to coerce somebody. Why do we have a system in place where when somebody has put their word on paper, their wishes and desires on paper, and then that's their final word for when they die, that why do we have a system in place that doesn't honor that immediately? It takes it and goes, no, you have to pay all these fees.
So just so the audience can understand clearly here what's happened, you cannot just take a piece of paper and say, I, Penny Lougheed, hereby leave all my worldly goods to William Brookfield.
No.
And then have it notarized by you, and you are signed.
In a proper system, yes. Yeah. That's the way it should be.
So they must think that someone has a gun to your head is making you write these things out. So proving validity, anyway, this is something that most of us, in fact, my sister, who's does a lot of accounting for different groups of people, has told me that that's all I really need to do. There's even forms on the internet I can get, and it's a little more detailed. And then I sign it and take it to a notary, and for $40, they notarize it, and it's a done deal. So that's not enough.
Not according to them, and it should be enough. It is enough, but they put us through all these hoops and these ringers.
Yeah. Is that common, what you went through? Or does this happen to a lot of people?
Yes, yes. Okay. And that's a huge problem. And that's why I'm sharing this story. In particular, like all of this with my dad's estate, there's so much to it. There's so much. Like if we sat here and went through the documentation that's before us and look at this is like what I've brought here. There's 5 binders there. that's only half of it. I burnt the other half because the other half is kind of the documentation that in there is kind of irrelevant to everything. So I burnt about half of it.
Maybe this is a good time to take a little break.
Yeah, we'll take
because we've been going pretty hard here for about 40 minutes and we've got about
40 minutes in? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there we go. So we'll be back shortly with Brad Weston and Penny Lougheed.
North Okanagan Shoe Swap Freedom Radio, where freedom and rights actually matter.
And we're back with Brad. So Brad, here's where we are so far. Your dad was passing away. There was questions about the validity of the will. Your stepmother says she had a will, and then your dad actually went off to a lawyer, got a will, and there was all this battle in court, and you wanted to represent yourself because of big costs with lawyers and whatnot. And you found out that the court system is really not in favor of the individual. It really works for the lawyers and the judges and the system. Yes. So can you pick it up and take us from there? And we've got about 25 minutes to finish up the story. So.
Well, I was just getting off with about, you know, how the trial ended up being conducted where none of her lawyers showed up. And she had gone through 7 different lawyers, which also, in accordance with their rules and everything, is a no-no. But she was allowed to do so. And when after the trial had conducted, we left having proven the validity of the will, and it only took, it was done and over in 2 days, could have been over in a day. So we left still having to deal with the matter of costs. So the Judge Benton seized himself to hear the matter of costs. Now the will is proven in solemn form, so it can be enforced, and the executor and myself, we went to the property to check the state of the property because my stepmom, she was given the life estate over the property.
What does that mean exactly?
Life estate is, it was a joint tenancy. So my dad owns half, my stepmom owns the other half. He gave her life estate, meaning that she can live there for as long as she wants, or she can rent it out. And kind of do as she sees fit until she either dies or she wants to sell. So I can't go in there and be like, okay, the estate wants to sell the property or we want to, you know.
You can't kick her out.
I can't kick her out. I can't move in or nothing like that. Mm-hmm. But I have first right to refusal, meaning if she wants to sell, it has to be offered to me to buy, to purchase. That's how he had it set up. So she moved out immediately after my dad had passed, so indicating she doesn't even have any intentions. She doesn't want to live there. She put in renters on the property, but those renters, this renter was under the impression that he's going to own it or that he does own it. And we were hearing rumors that she had paid this man, or this man had paid her $50,000 cash as a down deposit sort of deal. Mm-hmm. So after the actual trial, we went to the property to check on the condition because you have, even if you have if you're a life estate owner, you have a responsibility for other beneficiaries to maintain the property, to look after it, to pay the taxes, to do all the upkeep and maintenance. So we went to the property to check on it, and she's just letting it fall apart, which is another no-no in according to the court system. So we went there, and then this one gentleman who was living there thinking that he's going to purchase it, he ended up leaving, and then she put in another renter on there. But after the trial took place, I went to our lawyer and I asked for all the documentation that they had. So they gave me this fairly big box of just loose documents. I started going through it, and I found a correspondence by email between her and one of her other lawyers, one of my stepmom's lawyers, Robert Kulas, and there was a point where my stepmom did offer to settle the estate, settle this court case. So she offered us $8,000, which is a no,
ridiculous.
Especially when I just want to purchase the property honoring my dad's will. And I was in a position to purchase the property at that time. But I'm going through all this documentation, and I find this correspondence. And what had happened was her side, so she, early on, with Robert Kulas, she had said that she could only find one potential buyer for the property, and this was this gentleman who was living up there. And I turned around and said, okay, well, I'll purchase the property. And she said that she was going to sell it to this man for $175,000. So I said, okay, through her lawyer, I said, I'll buy it for $175,000. Well, I knew that the property was worth $4,000. So if you're selling it to somebody for $175,000, I'll buy it. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of going, okay, you know, let Brad buy it, they turned around and they said they wanted an appraisal done. I was like, I told our lawyer, I said, we don't need an appraisal. I know the property's worth $350,000 to $400,000. I don't need an appraisal. We don't want one, but if they're getting one, whatever. So they went and got an appraisal done. The appraisal came back at $236,000. Mm-hmm. And that was just one of those. It's not like the actual market assessed value. This is, but it came back at $236,000. So I just raised my hand again and said, I'll purchase the property for $236,000. That's, what is that? That's $56,000 or however. Yeah, it's. Is it 60? How much? It's $60,000 more than what she had been taking as an offer or wanting as from this other gentleman. They just ignored that, but they got this appraisal done. And after, when the trial was fully over and done with, going through these documents, I find correspondence between our lawyer and this lawyer, Robert Kulas. And this lawyer was saying, okay, we're getting an appraisal done on the property, and I have a government check. So my dad's check in the amount of $2,500 or $2,600, and I'm going to apply that to the appraisal. So he took estate money without the approval of the executor, without the approval of the beneficiaries, without them even knowing, without their consent, without their agreement. A lawyer took estate money that was not his client's. It was for the other party. It was the estates. It wasn't even the other parties. But he took that money. And he utilized it for his client's benefit.
So he basically stole it.
He stole it. He absolutely did. He stole money from my dad's estate and then didn't supply us with any sort of bill or any sort of, I don't even know to this date.
Not even informed you.
I don't even know how much was the appraisal? How much did they charge to do the appraisal? $500? $1,000? Where did the rest of the money go? Was it actually $2,500 for the appraisal? Mm-hmm. But they did that. So I called out. I immediately called him out asking, okay, where is it? Show me proof. I want to see the bills. Nothing. I'm ignored. Mm-hmm. Then I get a hold of my lawyer and like, okay, where is it? Like what? And same thing. My lawyer ended up, now I'm not hearing nothing from them. So they're doing all these things.
So they're in cahoots, basically.
They are. And that's all of them. I'm learning through other avenues of what I've been dealing with in the legal system that they're all communicating with each other. Mm-hmm. So somebody like me who's kind of in their face and calling them out on the wrong that they're doing, they're communicating with each other back and forth. And I have validation of that through another lawyer that I utilized here in Vernon. Knowing that he, like certain things that he said when he was interacting with me, mm-hmm. he was having prior conversations with other lawyers about me specifically. Mm-hmm. So they are in cahoots and they're not doing what's in our best interest and they're not acting for their client. They're acting for themselves and they're acting for each other.
Right.
They're looking after each other and they're stealing from us. Mm-hmm. They're stealing from the public and they're causing us harm. They're causing us financial harm and they're tearing apart people's lives. Yeah. I also, through it, going through this documentation, my dad had been complaining that my stepmom was stealing his money. We never saw any evidence of that, never saw any proof of that. But now going through these documents that the lawyers had, that they had got, because they went and picked up the financials through the Scotiabank and everything, we find out that my stepmother was taking my dad's pension checks and his Canadian pension and something else. I think there's something from WorkSafe BC, but he was getting these monthly checks. Mm-hmm. She was taking his money, and every time a check would be deposited into their joint account, it's their joint account. So it, by legal definition, it's both theirs. But mm-hmm. he was complaining that my finances, she's withholding my finances, won't let me access my money, she's stealing my money. she was taking it and transferring it into an unknown account from their joint account. So she was stealing from them,
right,
from my dad. Mm-hmm. And here's this proof and all this evidence of all the fraud, all the criminal acts that she committed that the system's ignoring and allowing. We have total negligence and willful ignorance from all these people working in government and allowing these things to happen. And now we're at a point where I'm still trying to deal with the cost part of it. The executor, the main executor, has renounced his executorship, so now it falls on me as the alternate executor. So I've made applications to get the cost hearing portion of it done. Throughout all of this, my stepmom has not communicated with us. You're supposed to, in accordance with their rules, you're supposed to give a proper address for service. You're supposed to keep the other party up to date. You're supposed to communicate with them. Nothing. She just ignores us, doesn't tell us where she's living, doesn't give us an address for service. Courts are allowing this to happen. There's all these damaging things going on. She's going against all the rules. Every time we make an application, she doesn't respond to it. We don't hear from her. So we're going into the courtroom. And recently I made these applications to get the costs heard, going into the courtroom, and she's not showing up, but she's been given notice through emails that's verified through the courts, because the court's actually attached when we're sending these documents. She's not showing up. Court rules state that, like, if you have been put on notice and you don't show up, that it proceeds without you, or yeah, can proceed without you, and a judgment can be made against you. Mm-hmm. Well, the judge just keeps adjourning it. He goes, nope, adjourned. And then it goes, nope, adjourned. He's done this 3 times in a row now. And each time they said that they're going to give direction for this to be heard and they're going to set a date, but they don't set a date. And then the last time they didn't even send us notice of the hearing. We were supposed to have a hearing on the 13th, on Monday the 13th of June here. I was waiting around, as they do it on the week of. I was waiting around that morning, checking my emails, waiting, nothing, nothing, nothing. Finally, I called. I said, hey, what's going on? Oh, it was heard this morning at 10 a.m. So what do you mean it was heard this morning at 10 a.m.? I didn't get they're sending the MS links on to join via online. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't get it. So then I was talking to scheduling. Scheduling got a hold of the Vernon Courthouse. Vernon Courthouse goes, we sent it. I said, no, you didn't. Like, mm-hmm. Or when I talked to them, I said, no, you didn't. No, we sent it, and you should have got it this morning. I was speaking to them at 2 o'clock. They sent it at 12:18, but the hearing was at 10 a.m. So they sent it after the fact, and they sent it with no date, no time. So the courts, and I've had this over and over again with multiple issues with them, where they're making mistakes that are causing dragging it out longer, mm-hmm. and there's no accountability for the mistakes that they make.
Wow.
That cost people thousands upon thousands of dollars.
Right. How and much then did the you time, say it was a day to have a courtroom, a to, court hearing?
To book the courtroom, it's $1,500 per day.
Yeah.
To have a lawyer stand in the courtroom and speak for you, mm-hmm. it's $10,000 a day. So it's $11,500 a day for you to be
tremendous
in a courtroom.
Tremendous costs, yeah.
Just to have a hearing
yeah.
done.
Unbelievable.
And to get a trial. And yeah. it's not benefiting anybody. So people in society, first of all, really, truly should be resolving their issues between themselves, because
yeah.
any party that has a claim against each other isn't going to win. You're not going to get ahead. Yeah. And even at best, when you do win your case, you've already spent the money that you're going to get mm-hmm. back in the end.
Yeah.
So you're no further ahead. Yeah. You're either behind or you're where you were, or maybe a little bit ahead.
Plus all the stress and the time that you
yeah.
put into this.
Even the time and energy. Look where I'm at. I'm at 7 years now with yeah. my dad's estate.
And it's still not settled.
Still not settled. Still not done. Now all my stepmom, grief. She's sick. She's in palliative care. And that's what this judge kind of brought up this last time. Well, he goes, well, wouldn't you, aren't you sympathetic to her being sick? Well, no, I'm like sympathetic to my time, my energy, my resources, my family, which includes her, but that's her kind of like karma that's come around.
Mm-hmm.
And,
sure.
you know, she could have just honored my dad's will and mm-hmm. it would have been...
Saved herself a whole lot of trouble,
she
right?
would have saved herself. She could have lived on the
and
property.
She yeah.
would have had what she's entitled to through the estate.
So she yeah. got greedy or something happened there? That
I could say a lot about that, about my stepmom. There's... I don't want to say greed. I really think something in her mind like slipped.
Yeah.
Where she just like,
well, it's good to give her the benefit of the doubt, right?
Yeah. I see it as a medical condition, a psychosis kind of deal, but it's our legal system needs to change. And this is proving it. This is showing it.
Yeah.
And we can, and that's what we're going to get into. We can, there's the common law is the true way that it like brings about or puts people's well-being ahead of everything and puts our rights ahead of everything and right. throws the commerce behind us.
Yeah.
And still has that there, but you know, it puts it where it belongs.
So Brad, do you think during the last 8 or 9 minutes we got left here that you could tell us how the better way would be using common law, how this would all pan out if you were to use a common law system with your situation? Can you set that up for us?
I can. Yes. So something like this. So my dad's estate, if we had a true common law system in place, what would have happened? So I would have gone, we wouldn't have something where you have to prove the validity of somebody's will. It would just be, here's the man's will. This is what he signed off on, mm-hmm. for his time of death. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. That would be it.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. And there would be, nobody would be able to argue somebody's will in last wishes. It would just
what
be.
What if you did suspect something, somebody was then coerced?
So you can make a claim, and this is what I was going to mention. So something like my dad's estate happens, and my stepmom has a claim. She makes a claim. And she goes, okay, I feel that Brad coerced Brad coerced Howard into making this will. So she makes a claim. She places this claim upon me. And what happens is we put out a public notice of claim of right. This right. is through a true common law court.
Yep.
So you put out a public notice of claim of right, and 12 people from your community, 12 women and men, fellow women and men, they mm-hmm. answer that. And they go, okay, I will hear that. I'll hear that case. I'll hear that claim. Once you have the 12, and that's what forms a jury. So now you have the 12 forming the jury. Once you have those fellow women and men, your peers, ready to hear this, you set a date. And when that date is set, that is the date of your trial, of your hearing. There's no these notices of applications and these other
things. Doesn't have to be in a courthouse?
It doesn't have to be in a courthouse.
Could be on a street, in a hall.
Could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And a court is the gathering of the people. Mm-hmm. So you go, okay, we're going to hear this claim. So you get all the people together on this very specific date. There's no middleman. There's no lawyer. There's no, there's a judge, but the judges and the people who are acting as the court, they're only there to oversee that everything goes in accordance with how a court should be conducted.
And does the judge have to be a real judge?
No, not at all.
Someone, I could appoint William as the judge, or Tal.
Or Tal as the judge, yeah. Myself as the judge, if I'm not one of the parties that is involved in the claim.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need to have a basic understanding of how
common law court is.
Yeah. Runs. Of how the procedures are and how this is to be conducted.
Yeah.
And basically those people who are forming the court they're just there to oversee that, you know, everything goes smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
And so you come on that day. So if it's between my stepmother and I, my stepmother comes, I come, mm-hmm. she brings her documentation, I bring my documentation.
Mm-hmm.
We sit down, we don't have anybody in between us talking, we do the talking.
Mm-hmm.
We do the, you know, the kind of delegating between ourselves. And the jury's sitting there and they're listening and they're looking at, they review the documents and everything. And then we take a break. And once we've stated our case, we take a break. The jury goes and they deliberate between themselves and they go over everything. And then they make a decision. And their decision has to be unanimous. And so once they make their decision, that's it. It's final. It's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over in a day.
Right.
That's the way to do it.
Just one point of clarification. So you've put out this notice that there's mm-hmm. going to be this case. And who chooses the jury, the 12 people?
Themselves.
So, okay. So they would see this on a telephone pole in town or in a paper or whatever. And they would step up and select themselves to be on this. So hopefully there'd be a sort of an equal amount for each person to represent them. Or do you just... are the people just going to be there and they don't necessarily need to know you or your mother? They just need to hear the case. And be fair. And
yeah, we've done this twice now. We did it twice now in Lumbee. I've held two common law courts at my house. And I did it. I did the public notice of claim of right. I put it out on Facebook. So I publicly posted it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I had 12 people instantly, just like that. They answered. I didn't know any of them. But amazing, beautiful people. They came together and they heard the claim that I had. And it was actually the glorious thing. It was one of the most magnificent experiences I've ever had going through that. So it's legitimate, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Right, and that was to do with the school board, which we'll talk about it another time.
We're going
to
get it. That's the school board, and also yes, and another wonderful, beautiful girl, woman Maya, who was held in the
hospital.
Vernon Jubilee Hospital under the Mental Health Act. So yeah, we'll get into that going down the road here.
Beautiful. So is there anything else you'd like to say about how this common law court would play out? Is there any more you need to add to it? So you've got your jury, they hear the case, and then they deliberate and then they make a judgment. Is that right?
Yeah, they make a decision, and then that their decision is final. It's what stands. And that's just the end of it.
Everybody goes home
and it's done and over. And the ones that the two that we held, one was done in 2 weeks and the other one was done and over in 3 days.
Say your mother-in-law doesn't like say it comes in your favor, and your mother-in-law, can she appeal it? Is there such a thing as an appeal?
No, it's a final decision.
It's done.
It's done and over.
Done like dinner.
Yeah. And that's having a system like this, like the true common law system in place, the real intention in the drive for it is to try to get women and men to resolve their issues between themselves, mm-hmm. outside of the system.
Right.
And that's what we should be doing anyway. We should be communicating, but that's the whole driving factor behind it is to get, mm-hmm. try to get people to resolve their issues without even having to take
the court system.
Use the court system and to go that route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope more and more of that happens. And just the fact that, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 other people now know about this, and now our whole radio audience are going to be learning about this and realizing that they can do it too. Although you seem to have a special gift, I got to say, but, you know, the fact that you were study those documents and study those policies and you knew all those little nuances indicates to me that you have a deep, keen interest and an understanding that many of us might not have. So, for instance, if someone wanted to have a will drawn up, would they come to you, or would they just draw it up themselves? And just talking about kind of what we're talking about here, do you need to be involved as a person in the common law, or?
I can definitely direct.
You're an auditor, right? You're
a public service auditor. We're going to get into that.
So that's a whole other thing. We'll leave that for another day.
We're going to get into that another day. But I definitely, I can. Anybody can give legal advice. So I can definitely, there's quite a few people who I've already been helping and directing and guiding through certain things. So anybody's more than welcome to reach out to me.
Could you maybe give us your number and we'll sort of close it off with your phone number, mm-hmm. and your website, which is very, very interesting. So maybe we could.
Yeah. My direct line, my home line, I don't have a cell phone or anything, but my direct home line is 250-547-6590. Our website is thenewnarrative.ca or thennewnarrative.com, but it's thenewnarrative.ca. And there is quite a few, of our legal things laid out there. So anybody can contact myself and ask me for any sort of information, any questions that they have. I'll direct them through anything on the website that we have set up there. We do have, I am now starting to post, I'm posting all the documentation after today from all my court cases. So I'm just going to slowly be putting, like even my dad's estate, I'm going to be slowly be putting all the paperwork, just like one after the other, so people can see. And at the same time, we have all of the common law courts that we've now mm-hmm. handled and dealt with. Mm-hmm. So the two common law courts that we've held in Lumbee, one of them's posted up there now. All that information is going to be posted there so people can go through, they can see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then they can also reach out by email. We have an email contact list that has, there's 86 women and men on there now that are looking at getting involved in what we're looking at with the cohort community.
Right.
So people can reach us by email at bcpublicserviceauditor.com. Or, sorry, bcpublicserviceauditor@outlook.com.
Outlook.com. Yes. Okay. Now, Tal gave us a great document to kind of get us started with common law, and I've forgotten the name of it, but it was about a 25, 30-page document. What was the name of it? Something about community guidelines.
Oh, there's the for common law. We have the.
It was dropped off at your house when you were in the middle of all this with your dad.
Yeah, we have the Common Law Community Training Manual.
That's what it is.
Yes.
And we also... Common Law Community Training Manual. Where can they find that?
You can find it. People can contact me and they can order it. I put it in like a binder and we charge $45 for that. Or they can go to the newnarrative.ca and it's under one of our drop-down tabs, one of the Common Law drop-down tabs, and it's right there. They can download it for free or they can order it as a hard copy, and I'll do it up in a binder for them. And then in that we attach the documents that we've done for our common law courts, and then it'll be in the binder. In addition to that, for really valuable information in for common law, people can go to letjusticebedone.com. That's letjusticebedone.com. There's a gentleman in Vancouver. His name is Ryan. He has done a phenomenal job of writing out for free. Anybody can go download it. We've printed it and we've made a book for ourselves. But he put everything into this and he put his heart and soul into it. It's done in his own words. And beautiful man. So I highly recommend that people go to letjusticebedone.com. There's a little bit of derogatory words in there that he uses, but people will really find that valuable and love the information that he's put in there about common law.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, because there's a lot of valuable resources there. Just everything you've said, and then with these things that we can get from you and this website you've just mentioned. So thanks again, Brad. We look forward to number two, and just give us a tiny little teaser what number two is going to be about, our get together. I can just pull it up here on the phone and maybe remind us. So it looks like number two is working for the school district.
Oh, yes. That's,
and the EMFs. Very brief.
Yes. So I worked for School District 22 starting in 2017. And then there's some really vital information that I learned with what our school district, not just our school district, but the entire public education system, not only here in Canada, but down in the United States, all across the world, is doing with our children's online information, with their online recorded information. There's some vital information that parents and students, even staff working for the government, need to know what they are doing. And then in addition to that, what's happening with wireless technology, what's going on with AI, artificial intelligence. There's some really, really crucial things that people need to know about that I called out as I was working for the school district, and then it turned into a whole...
And they let you go.
Well, they didn't... We'll get into that. I'll share that story. But yeah, they essentially...
It got ugly.
They essentially viewed me as a bad employee that they wanted to... Yeah.
Well, that sounds really interesting, exciting, and really important for everybody to hear about that.
Yes. Yeah. I'm excited about
that. Especially parents with children in school.
Yeah. I don't agree with my children being in public school at all.
And that's why you homeschool them. Your wife doesn't.
Yeah, we're split, so I do 1 week, she does one week. I homeschool during my week.
And plus 7 other children, I hear.
Yeah, 10. 10 altogether. So there's 12 altogether that I've been homeschooling with. Amazing. On my week. Yeah, it's been really awesome. So,
wow, that's quite admirable.
I like, I think the new direction for society is learning through living is how we should be.
Absolutely. Hear. We all agree, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Brad, thanks again.
Thank you.
Have a
pleasure.
Good evening.
Cheers.
Okay, take care, everybody.
All right.
Signing out.